This is it. We've got an Amex Platinum Pro on our hands, ladies and gentlemen. We haven't seen anyone relax like this before in the Centurion Lounge. Is he connecting to complimentary Wi-Fi? Oh, my. Look at that. He is. And you will not believe where he's going next. The Amex dedicated card member entrance for the win. Unbelievable.
When you get travel perks with Amex Platinum, you're part of the action. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
You know you've got a comeback in you. When you take the next step, you're going to make it count. For your career, for your family, for your life. You can earn a degree you're proud of with Purdue Global. Purdue Global is backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected and innovative public universities. This is your chance. This is your opportunity. This is your comeback. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
I will be plugging in a back heating pad.
Ooh, so snazzy.
Not trying to show off or anything.
You came prepared.
My friend told me this weekend that the lower left part is where your emotional stress is. So I don't really feel like I'm like emotionally stressed too much. All right.
Tony.
Michael.
I want my name on an F1 car.
Okay.
And I know you're the person to talk to about this. And actually, let me rephrase. I want to put my face and my name.
Okay.
Because what good is it if you don't see the face? You know this.
Yeah.
How much would that cost me? How long would it be on there? Can I just do a race if it's cost effective? I'm not picky. It doesn't have to be front and center on the car. It could be on one of the wheel hubs or the little wing or even a decal on the driver's helmet. It doesn't have to be Ferrari. It could even be Haas.
I love that in the same sentence you said, I'm not picky, but I just want my face on a Formula One car.
Yeah. And if we happen to mention my TikTok handle, Michael Costa _, that's not going to hurt anybody.
Okay.
I'm not as happy as I can be in my life. And once this happens, that will fill the void. Help me.
Sure.
Can you help me with this?
Theoretically, yes.
Great. I'm all about theory. For My Heart Podcast, 101 Studios, and Sports Illustrated Studios, this is
Choosing Sides. F1.
Tony, what is the business model of F1? Is it even right to call it a business? Mm. If it's a business, then somebody has to own it. In basketball, nobody owns the NBA per se. I mean, I think it's individual teams are privately owned and a franchise is collectively owned by all of them. I do remember season 1, Lily told me about this one guy, Bernie.
Former Formula One boss Bernie Ecclestone has been given a 17-month suspended jail sentence after pleading guilty to fraud.
Yep.
Who sold F1. What does that even mean? How can you sell it in the first place? I can't sell basketball, right?
No. Yes. These are some great questions, and I think this is where we're going to get into a lot of fun. Let's take these questions one by one, and today let's dive into Formula One's weird and quirky and at times feeling like a sport that has lost maybe its moral compass.
Mm.
But we're going to look at the business model of Formula One and all the different layers into it.
I should understand that because my moral compass is long gone.
The following is disturbing footage from Michael Costa's comedic archive.
Someone asks you for a favor, say it with yes, with a smile on your face, and then absolutely botch the favor. Hey, can you pick my kids up at daycare? I would love to do that for you. And then you just don't ever pick those kids up. They'll never ask you again.
There she is.
Hello.
Hello, lovely. How are you doing?
I am good.
To help us with some insights into the business model of F1, I've asked Elizabeth Blackstock to join us.
Hi, Elizabeth.
How would you describe yourself? What's your job and how does F1 fit into your wonderful world?
Ooh, it's such a big question. F1 is everything, I think.
I love that.
A motorsport journalist and a historian.
She's also the primary American contributor to Planet F1. Mm. She's written books about F1, and she's even starting her very own podcast, Deadly Passions and Terrible Joys, all about the weird scandals and dramas in the chronicles of motorsport.
There's no shortage of those.
And Elizabeth is a longtime Formula One fan herself.
When I think back to 2014, that was the first ever Formula One race I went to, the U.S. Grand Prix. I was 18 years old, like going, having the time, thinking I'm going to get this out of my system. Like I'm going to watch race cars and be done. And that did not happen. But I can remember being at the track on race day and kind of having the run of the place. It was sparse. It wasn't super busy. There were no lines for things. There were certainly no lines for the women's bathrooms. Suddenly, it's just this massive explosion where people are aware of what the sport is. In the past, I'd like mentioned something to a professor, like, hey, I'm taking a day off. I'm going to race somewhere. And they would have no idea what I was talking about. And now, like, I go outside, and even in the small town I live in Texas, there's people with their Red Bull hats on because they're rooting for Sergio Perez or their Ferrari getup. It's just become so huge here in such a very short space of time. Americans are getting it, which is, it's nice.
How would you explain to a new fan how teams make money, how sponsors make money? It definitely feels, when you look at the sport, that there's a lot of money being thrown at the sport and there's a lot of money being invested in the sport. But how does anyone in this industry actually make money at the end of the day?
That is such a good question.
It's a big question.
It is not easy to make money in Formula One, no matter how many millions of dollars you're swimming around in at all times. I think in this modern era, we've seen a big jump in profitability for the sport overall as the company itself. In the past, Formula One was just kind of like a way for rich drivers to have fun. these were like kind of noble gentlemen who had the money and the access to get cars.
You might have to have a few bob, but you didn't have to be super rich.
This is Matt Bishop, English journalist, author, novelist, and a true fixture of the F1 paddock.
You could buy a Maserati 250F, one of the most beautiful Formula One cars there's ever been. But if you were someone like Horace Gould, who wasn't particularly quick, but had a business, wasn't minted, but was just somebody who did quite well and had a bit of money and loved motor racing. So he bought a 250F Maza and he went racing in it not very well. And he didn't have to do all the races. He didn't have to take it to Argentina if he thought that would be too much of a pain in the bum to do that.
But that wasn't really enough to sustain a massive growth of the sport. And especially when smaller manufacturers became interested in competing, kind of, you know, these backyard teams that had sprung up, especially in England. It was like, oh, we can't afford this because we're not independently wealthy. What do we do now? And now it's currently profitable because of some very aggressive TV deals that were struck by Bernie Ecclestone, who is certainly a man.
We always say, like, love him or hate him, he's definitely changed the sport.
When I was at school in the 70s, I was the only one who liked Formula One. I loved football as well, but my mates only liked football, but they liked cricket and rugby and other things, snooker, believe it or not, but not Formula One. It was only me, and you couldn't find it written about on the newspapers, and it wasn't on the telly. And it was Bernie Ecclestone, who realized that really Formula One could be taken to the world via two industries now, which you can't really monetize in the same way: tobacco and television.
I think that, honestly, most of Ecclestone's career was this kind of slow build that was developing profitability for Formula One. So he tried his hand at racing when he was young, realized he wasn't good at it, and then was like, actually, I can wheel and deal pretty well. Let me do that. I don't know if you've ever seen this photo that goes around occasionally in the late 1960s. It's the Austrian driver Jochen Rindt. On the side of his helmet is the phrase, "This space for Let." That's because he was managed by Bernie Ecclestone. It was one of the very prototypical examples of trying to seek sponsorship in a sport that previously was just country colors and national pride and, you know, manufacturer dominance. It wasn't about companies. It wasn't about sponsorship. And that was the first key that kind of changed the name of the game. Lotus then took Jochen Rindt on as a driver, got their first massive sponsorship, changed the name of the game.
I'm curious, what was that first sponsorship deal they got? Like, who was it with?
Lotus got the Gold Leaf Embassy sponsorship, the tobacco company. Really made everyone upset because they thought it was cheapening the sport by promoting a tobacco brand and a vice on their cars instead of it being this noble pursuit that Formula One supposedly should have been.
Well, 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 the tables have turned. One other, well, we can't really call this one a fun fact, but it's actually a very sad fact.
The normal continuum of human events has a beginning and an end. Jochen Rindt is dead.
Soon after securing that first ever F1 sponsorship deal, Johan Hindt actually crashed and died in the practice session in the Monza circuit in Italy.
Jeez.
His good friend and biggest rival, Sir Jackie Stewart, a man who we will definitely come back to in several times during this season, was, as you can imagine, absolutely heartbroken.
Jochen was perhaps my greatest friend in motor racing. I perhaps feel sadder at this moment than I've ever done before any race.
Rindt was actually leading the Drivers' Championship when he was killed, and this was towards the end of the season. So even though he passed away before the season concluded, he actually went on to take the championship. So this makes him not only the first driver to secure a sponsorship, but also the only driver in Formula One history to be posthumously awarded the Formula One Drivers' Championship.
He will have won the world championship. The manner of his winning it illustrates the randomness of human experience.
Okay, dark interlude here. Sorry to do this, but back to the business model. So Lotus gets that first sponsorship from a tobacco company. What's next?
I think the next step, honestly, Bernie Ecclestone went bigger. He bought the Brabham Formula One team, invested so much into making that a world championship team, but in the meantime was also establishing something called the Formula One Constructors Association, which is essentially what the Formula One group became. And it was through that association that he did battle with the FIA to establish these incredible forms of revenue sharing for the teams.
Back in the day when we had qualifying session, it wasn't actually just qualifying to know if you were going to start P6, P7, P20 on the grid. It was actually to know if you could qualify and were fast enough to actually go racing on Sunday because we had a lot more teams and a lot more drivers because it didn't cost as much as it does today.
Right.
And the other thing that you would happen is people would just be like, I'm not going to show up on Sunday. I'm good. I've got, you know, kids' birthday party. I don't need to come.
Right.
Which you can't actually make money guaranteeing a race if you can't guarantee that the teams actually show up and the drivers show up. So that was the essential idea behind the Concorde Agreement, which they've signed again, I think, till 2026, which guarantees that these 10 teams that we have on the grid are going to show up. They have enough money to keep paying to drive and that the drivers are going to show up as well.
Seems like a no-brainer. Show up to work.
Show up to work.
But as someone who just lived through 6 months of a writer's strike, if people don't get paid, they don't show up to work.
That's a great
you know
point.
What I mean? You got to show up. And so there needs to be rules in place to make sure work happens.
Exactly.
And good job, Bernie.
There you go. Not something you'll hear often these days.
It was a genius move. I think that was really the big, like, kind of trajectory, that time period from the late 1960s into the 80s, where we really kind of started to see this massive influx of cash and having this standardization and regular income becoming prioritized because no one was just independently rich anymore. You wanted that money to actually develop a team.
Okay, hold on. Before we move forward, I think we need to take a little step back and explain the trifecta of the sport that I think is really important to start off with. The three biggest, most influential bodies that interplay with each other, which would be the FIA, Liberty Media, and FOM. And they each play very separate but equally important roles within the ecosystem of Formula One.
FIA stands for?
Fédération Internationale de l'Automobile, which is a French word.
Okay, now say it. And let me ask it again. What does it stand for?
Federation
International
of
Autos.
Autos, basically.
Wow. Of all the autos.
Of all the
International Federation. Liberty Media, that sounds very broad, very general. That sounds like the name of a media company in a horror film.
Yeah, if you want to.
And FOAM.
And FOAM, which is...
Fear of Missing Out.
Fear of Missing Out. Yeah. That's absolutely what it stands for. It's Formula One Management.
Copy.
So basically, F1.
It's a lot of governing bodies.
So let's start with the FIA.
The FIA is the kind of international nonprofit organization that sanctions Formula One races to make sure that they are all run in the same rule set and to make sure that every team is operating in the same way.
You don't hear nonprofit a lot.
No.
In F1.
No.
In fact, that seems to violate
everything.
The foundation of F1.
Yes.
Yeah, interesting.
I just wanted to pull up this quote I found online from this official F1 document.
Okay, yep.
F1 mission statement. To leave a legacy of positive change wherever we race. Enriching local communities and economies. And supporting the natural environment.
I think that's lovely.
Inspiring. So yeah, this is not about money, Michael. It's about making the world a better place.
One of my favorite parts of F1 is how profit and capitalistic it all feels.
Yeah.
It's okay. Like, yeah. we're branding, we're going, we're
but
fast.
Michael, it's a nonprofit.
It's a nonprofit. Exactly.
It's an outside source. It doesn't just sanction F1. It sanctions, I think, over 400 different series around the world to greater or lesser levels of importance than F1.
You will always hear the fans getting really angry with the FIA. Because they're constantly changing the rules. The way they regulate is constantly shifting. The fans are always unhappy with the fines that they give the drivers.
Can we get your reaction to the reprimand and the fine that you received from the stewards this morning?
You might have remember hearing Max Verstappen jokingly saying, once he got a fine, well, I hope the FIA enjoys a nice dinner and drinks on me.
Hope they have a nice dinner and a lot of wine.
Oh, Max.
So the FIA is heavily responsible for drafting, regulating, and enforcing the rules and the regulations. That's why the fans always get angry on them, but their whole thing is also safety and security. So when you look at how the sport has evolved over the years in terms of safety and security for the drivers, the FIA is at the pinnacle of pushing for that.
People can die in the sport.
Yes.
That changes everything.
It changes everything. So Jackie Stewart was one of the drivers that has often pushed for that. He also pushed for a union of drivers, which is important to note in the evolution of Formula One. He still remembers the days when he would travel with the sport and he would always bring a black tux with him because you never knew whose funerals you would attend, which is bleak. And I'm delighted to say that that is no longer the case these days. It's still a danger sport. But
also, do you wear tuxedos to a funeral?
I don't know.
Maybe a black suit?
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Did I say tuxedo?
You said tuxedo,
very sharp.
But I don't know if it's like in different countries, maybe you wear a tux.
No, I think you wear a black suit.
Yeah.
Can I ask a bit of a controversial question here? Is there like an inverse relationship between how safe it is and how interesting the sport is? Is that too dark?
No, it's not too dark. I think it's an excellent question.
I don't know. I have a weird thing with this. I think as humans, we just enjoying people hurting themselves is just something that I struggle with. But I think the crashes in Formula One are so, for lack of a better word, explosive and in your face and shocking that it does draw you in.
It's an integral part of the sport. Come on, you can't deny that. Okay, I think this is a good time to take a short break. Listeners, you can use this as an opportunity as companies are pushing their products on you to contemplate your own mortality and appreciate the fleeting miracle that is life. That's what I do typically during commercial breaks.
I think you've just summed up F1 in a sentence there, Michael.
Mm-hmm. I'm brilliant.
There's no distance too far for the perfect trip.
Hi, checking in for...
Or the perfect table.
Hey, where are you?
Coming!
And when you get access to Resi Priority Notify with your Amex Platinum card...
Hey, this looks amazing!
I'm so glad you made it.
And travel benefits at fine hotels and resorts booked through Amex Travel. It's worth the trip. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
Right here, right now. Find your beautiful new floor at Right Rug Flooring. Choose from thousands of in-stock styles, ready for next day installation, and all backed by the right price guarantee. Visit rightrug.com. That's RITERUG.com today to schedule a free in-home estimate or to find a location near you. 24-month financing is available with approved credit. For 90 years, we've been right here, right now. Right Rug Flooring.
Okay, we're back. And now let's talk a little bit about FOM, shall we?
Yeah, because if we don't, I'm going to have FOMO. Wasn't sure you guys heard my joke the first time.
FOM is Formula One Management. Formula One Management is essentially the company that distributes those marketing and world feed rights for Formula One. So that's the one that kind of goes out and sells different aspects of the company to people and manages all of the media rights.
They're also the owner of the name and the rights of Formula One. Okay. They own the name Formula One and they own the rights. Their objective is essentially to drive commercial success.
They wanted American audiences.
They got it.
They wanted it and they got it. And maybe you don't just mess with unregulated capitalism because here it comes, baby.
Here it comes. At our doorstep.
Other countries always think they want to dip their toe in American capitalism. It is a beast. It is a beast. And it's coming for you.
They'll spit you out when it's done with you.
Yeah.
And that's where Liberty Media comes in.
Liberty Media is the American company that purchased essentially the FOM and those management rights from Bernie Ecclestone, who had previously been in charge of that company.
Every one of my companies has used debt leverage to boost up equity returns.
That is John Malone, chairman and largest shareholder of Liberty Media.
It doesn't mean that that's a bad strategy, particularly if you've been able to lock in long fixed rates.
I'd be a little freaked out if Viacom CBS owned the NHL.
So, I just want to drive this home to all of the American fans.
Yeah.
You've just been played and manipulated by a corporate American company yet again.
Yet again.
You know, Yohai, walk outside right now. There's somebody wearing a fucking Jack Daniels hat or a Dilly Dilly t-shirt or a Yankees bag. We were all being played all the time. Understanding you're being played and choosing what game you're playing in. I'm okay with that.
Amen.
Play ball!
Liberty Media did want to tap into the American market. I think it really understood that Formula One was closed off in Bernie Ecclestone's era. Ecclestone had a tight rein on all of the ways that Formula One was perceived, which included a lot of things, you know, even banning the use of social media in the paddock. Liberty Media came in and saw that these were very restrictive things that were actively hurting the image of the sport because drivers couldn't share things, influencers couldn't come to an event to share things, journalists were very limited in the things that they were able to say for fear of losing their jobs. Liberty Media opened it up to the public and was the reason why they got Netflix involved to create Drive to Survive, the series that has essentially changed the name of the game for Formula One. It opened up the personalities and the underworkings of the sport a little bit more for people to see so that, you know, there's more to connect to than just what happens on the track. Watching cars go in circles is not always the most compelling for people, but I've found that you can really get a wider audience involved when you tell them the stories of the people driving those cars. And that is what Liberty Media did. It just so happened that the American audience was rip-roaring ready to go to latch onto that during the COVID-19 pandemic.
Let me get this straight. An American media company owns F1, but the FIA and the FOM are other governing bodies that really can control things as well.
Yes.
It's a web of wildness all around.
Why would I expect it to be simple?
It's never simple.
Yeah.
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 Not in Formula One anyway.
No. Yeah. Who makes money here? Is it a company? Is it the driver? Is it the principal? Is that what they call them? And can you make money in F1? Or is it like buying a vineyard? You make great wine, but you lose a lot of money and you get something cool to show your friends.
It's a great question, actually.
I ask great questions.
I know you do. That's why you're here. You ask good questions.
There's this saying in motorsport that it takes $2 million to make $1 million. So everything you kind of put in, you almost expect that you're going to lose money. It makes sense for like a Mercedes to take on a challenge in Formula One to race their cars to be really fast because Mercedes sells road cars. It looks great for them to have, you know, successful cars. It looks great for that. It looks great for them to have technology that they can say was developed in Formula One. With Red Bull, it makes sense that this high octane company that loves adrenaline has something huge in the, you know, one of the craziest, fastest sports that there is. You're not really making a ton of money. You're mostly just kind of trying to stay alive and hope it all works out for the best. But it, you know, if you've noticed, it can be real. You can, if you have a team like, say, Williams, a former world champion, that slips down the rankings one year, they really struggle to claw their way back up because they don't have enough money to continue developing their cars. It's like, it is just kind of, it's a passion project for a lot of people. When people ask me what I wanted to do with my English degree from college, it was a very similar answer. It was like, I will find a thing that makes sense to me and that matters to me, and I will do that like wholeheartedly. And that's very similar with Formula One.
So as an American, Michael, you might have heard about Andretti as a name. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So Andretti are one of those teams that has been really interested in joining the grid. So there's an opportunity in 2026 to add more teams to Formula One. Now, the FIA says that you can have up to 13 teams in Formula One, which means 26 drivers on the grid. The reason why we haven't had more than 10 teams up until now is A, as we've been talking about, it's really expensive. B, it's also technically very complicated to build the types of engines that you need in Formula One these days.
Yeah.
And the latest regulations of 2022 are trying to change that. They're trying to lower the barrier to entry. We'll talk about the cost cap. They're also trying to make the power units that much more simple. So to ensure that more people can join the grid. So Andretti are one of the few teams that put a bid forward. But here's where the problem is. First of all, we've seen in the news the FIA pushing for a desire to have an 11th team. Mohammed bin Sulayem, which is the president of the FIA, has been very vocal about this. But the problem is he doesn't actually have that much of a say. And then you've got the teams, on the other hand, who've been pretty negative and averse to adding an 11th team.
The business is on fire. The sport's never been in a better place. And I believe if it ain't broke, you don't need to fix it. So I'm a strong believer that it's working really well with 10 teams right now. And believe that's the way it should stay.
There's just a concern from the teams that an 11th team will cut into their profits because prize money is distributed from a pot. So everyone takes out of this pot based on their performance. If you have an 11th team that starts scoring points, teams are seeing it as they've taken points away from us. So now all these teams are saying, hey, I don't want to have anyone in here. It's bad for the bottom line.
Yeah, and there's more people on the track. What's unique about this sport is there's literally only so much space on the track. So you add another car, another person to crash into. If you can add another team to the NHL, that doesn't mean there's 10 more people on the ice.
That's actually,
that's what I'm here for, these fucking and brilliant statements. But that I would not want, if I'm driving a car, I don't want more people on the street that I'm walking on. Yeah, exactly.
So that's the tension that we're in right now, is it's good for the sport to be seen adding more teams. It's good for it to showcase that, hey, this sport doesn't cost that much money. It's not that complicated. You can actually join the party, quote unquote.
Right.
But at the same time, you've got attention from the teams. And so there's things that have been shifting constantly of, well, how much does it cost to be a part of these teams? And they're now asking essentially the teams to prove that they have $1 billion in their bank account to ensure that they can keep paying to be a Formula One team.
Geez, you gotta have $1 billion?
Yeah.
Here comes the Saudis.
So, Michael.
Tony.
This is Tony of the future interjecting in here. Because we just got an update that the Andretti bid was in fact,
they are not deemed fit to join the grid in commercial terms by the sports commercial rights holder.
Rejected.
We do not believe that the applicant would be a competitive participant.
They will not be a part of the F1 grid until at least 2028.
Oh, wow. That's a long way away.
This does put the FIA, absolutely, the regulators, absolutely head to head with Formula One management and Liberty Media, the financial rights holders, because FIA said yes, Formula One have said no.
Okay, you can go back to the present now.
Okay.
Tony of the future.
So how do these teams make money?
So as we've discussed, it's the F1 prize money. It's also the sponsorship. And I'd say that sponsorship, it's give and take, it depends on different teams, but probably accounts for about 50% of the money that they make. And then if you're also a car manufacturer, you will also make money from selling your engines to mm-hmm. other teams, but also maybe the applied sciences. What teams are able to create and innovate behind closed doors, they can then sell.
So they're coming up with ideas and solutions and selling them to their competitors?
Yes. So for example, Ferrari is a works team that sells their engine also to Alfa Romeo. Mercedes is a works team that develop an engine and a power unit and sell it to Williams. And then you've got teams also like Alpine, whose engine is a Renault engine, but they're not selling it to anyone else. So right. No one wants to buy their engine, which we can go back to Andretti. Andretti is in talks of potentially buying their engine, which they would love because it's another revenue stream for them.
I see. Interesting. Makes sense. It's their side hustle.
It's their...
selling their power unit.
It's their side hustle. Yes, Michael. So the other way to look at it mm-hmm. is if you look at the 10 teams we have on the grid, there's maybe different buckets. There's the buckets of teams who are car manufacturers as well. So McLaren, Mercedes, Ferrari. And you can kind of wrap your head around why they would want to be in Formula One. Obviously, if Ferrari in the championship do very well, there's a fair, pretty straightforward line that says that they're probably going to sell more Ferraris
yeah.
of their sports cars. That's one bucket. There's the second bucket, which some would put in the bucket of, oh, you've just got so much money, you don't know what to do with it, and this seems like a great venture. You can think of Aston Martin with Lawrence Stroll. We can also talk about the fact that his son is one of the drivers on that team. So it's just like, I've got some spare cash in my back pocket. Let me have a Formula
right,
One team.
Right.
Glitz and the glamour of Formula One looks good. And then you've got a third bucket, which again goes a little bit back to the history of Formula One, the teams who've been there since the get-go. You think of the legacy of someone like Williams, someone like Ferrari, who, as I said, I think they've been there since day one. Fun fact. Both of those teams still get a pot of money at the start of every year to help them ensure that they never leave the sport.
Oh, interesting.
It's like a little bit of a bonus for being there since day one.
Right.
And I say a little bit of bonus, it's something like, 10, 20 million that they get at the start of the year.
There is only really one brand that transcends Formula One and is in a sense, perhaps you could argue, as big as or bigger than Formula One, and therefore its removal from Formula One would cause a seismic problem, a very serious problem. I mean, other teams having departed from the sport, such as Lotus, great pity. Brabham, great pity. BRM, great pity. Maserati, great pity. But Ferrari is Ferrari. Ferrari is special.
I mean, in tennis, the top players get appearance fees.
Yeah.
Whereas me and you wouldn't.
Yeah.
I shouldn't speak on your behalf. You might be an excellent tennis player, but you might deserve an appearance fee. But, it's kind of like, hey, Ferrari and Williams, you've been here. And they're huge names in the sport. So here's a couple bucks.
Here's a couple.
It would piss me off if I was a competitor. Because, of course, that money goes to helping you.
But that's interesting you bring that up, Michael, because essentially all the teams are doing exactly that with Andretti, which saying we've been here for the last 30-40 years. You don't get to just come in and take part of the prize money. So it's interesting because it's that same mentality that's still there, because, again, there's so much money that's being poured into it. There's a fourth bucket, which I think there's so many buckets, but it's the last one, I promise, which is more of like a marketing stunt, though stunt doesn't feel big enough. But you think of someone like Red Bull and you go, why does a fizzy drinks company pour a lot of their marketing budget into this Formula One team?
Delivering their livery for the US Grand Prix this year via helicopter. Who else is doing that? Who else is thinking of like depositing their car into the middle of Austin via helicopter just because it's cool? Red Bull is, because Red Bull's a genius at marketing.
I don't know if you've seen these, Michael, these Vox Pops of people in the street showing the 10 logos of the 10 F1 teams. The one that everyone always recognizes is Red Bull.
Yeah.
They're just like, oh, I know what that is. And it's so funny that it's not one of the Formula One teams, but right. The Red Bull brand is so strong outside of the sport that it actually has helped them a fair amount.
Red Bull is going to sell you drinks because you're going to look at that and be like, oh my God, that's insane.
So Red Bull is selling enough little energy drinks to make a rocket ship with wheels on it that keeps winning.
Yeah.
I'm just crunching the numbers here a little bit for you guys. So the budget for running the team is $150 million, which maybe Tony can explain. It has to do with the budget cap, the cost cap. Okay. So you can buy about 75 million Red Bull cans with that. Mm-hmm. And last year they sold somewhere in the area of 11.5 billion cans.
I mean, just isn't for anything. This just says that as a civilization, we're very tired. We're just drinking such crap. I swear to God, if people just drank more water, we would be such a better place.
Happier. Yeah. Healthier.
Happier. Skin would be better, stronger teeth.
Now I've got a can of Red Bull in my bag. Now's the time to...
Fun fact.
I bought it so much that the team at Red Bull, fun fact, now give me a crate every month.
I love
it. A crate. Just keep my... I don't drink coffee, so I do drink Red Bull and have since I was 13, bizarrely, which was a fluke from my dad. He thought it was fizzy water.
Well, your dad. Let's not get into him on this pod.
Let's not bring him into that. No, but the thing I did want to say about the market has gone down.
Well, maybe we could pause here for a second. So you've been drinking Red Bull?
He's worried about my health. Yes.
Wow.
Yeah. A can or two a day.
I mean, we haven't gone there yet, but I'm starting to understand why you're a Max Verstappen fan.
But I'm not a Max Verstappen fan.
You were saying good things.
I'm more of a defender of him.
Exactly.
I think Red Bull 100% found a market share that didn't exist.
Yes.
Breaking ground.
Yeah.
The next one is Liquid Death.
Is that water? That's water.
It's water, but it's marketed water, and that might be the next.
For years, a bunch of marketing fuckboys have tricked you into thinking that water is just some girly drink for yoga moms. Just look at all the cute brand names and dainty little bottles. Well,
can we please get back to Formula One here?
What's this cost cap thing you keep bringing up? Is that like salary cap?
No, but that has been a conversation. Okay. Should you cap the driver's salary, which I am fervently against?
Okay.
The Formula One cost cap is an artificial limit on how much every Formula One team is allowed to spend on certain things like the development of their car and the salaries of some personnel. Previously, Mercedes was spending over $400 million to win the world championship. While you had a team like Williams that was like maybe $10 million, you know, they just didn't have the funding to be able to match that. Limiting the expenditure of the teams to about $150 million every year, in theory, should help level the playing field because something like, you know, Red Bull can't go out and spend all of this extra money. However,
certainly not aware of any... The accounts were all submitted way back in March, so it's been a long process with the FIA.
You can. We saw that with Red Bull. They were accused of exceeding the cost cap.
That's complete rubbish. I mean, we heard from the FIA 10 days ago asking some questions for clarifications, as you would do in a standard audit.
They claimed it was through catering.
So it's just some really fancy sandwiches.
Yeah, just really, really expensive little finger sandwiches. That's it.
Who's checking all this?
The FIA is looking into all of those finances to make sure that everything is kosher. But you don't go, like, you don't get in a Formula One team if you don't find loopholes in everything that you do. And so we had teams like Red Bull that perhaps spent a little bit more money than they were supposed to, got away with it with nothing more than a slap on the wrist and having to pay a certain large fine for the pleasure, because spending money is obviously the answer to spending money.
Think about rich people with taxes. Think about, they're experts at cheating.
If you want to be in Formula One, you probably want to cheat a little bit, fudge the rules, find the loopholes.
One thing is certain. Unlimited budgets does not guarantee victory. I mean, look at the New York Yankees. They buy everybody. But huge budgets definitely puts you in a better chance for success. So I like this cost cap a lot.
Interesting.
Tony, what about my original question, which was sponsorships? In particular, how can I get my face on the Haas or Alpine car?
Don't you worry. I haven't forgotten. We are going to get into this very important topic, but just after a short break.
We better.
This is it. We've got an Amex Platinum Pro on our hands, ladies and gentlemen. We haven't seen anyone relax like this before in the Centurion Lounge. Is he connecting to complimentary Wi-Fi? Oh, my. Look at that. He is. And you will not believe where he's going next. The Amex dedicated card member entrance for the win. Unbelievable.
When you get travel perks with Amex Platinum, you're part of the action. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
I'm Katia Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
Right here, right now. Find your beautiful new floor at Right Rug Flooring. Choose from thousands of in-stock styles, ready for next day installation, and all backed by the right price guarantee. Visit rightrug.com. That's RITERUG.com today to schedule a free in-home estimate or to find a location near you. 24-month financing is available with approved credit. For 90 years, we've been right here, right now. Right Rug Flooring.
So what about sponsorships? You know, how much is it going to set me back to put my face on the Alpine car or the Haas car or the Mercedes car?
Well, if you wanted to put your name and your face on a Formula One car, I would recommend starting the bottom of the grid and working your way up, because your numbers will get larger as you move up to the more expensive and better performing teams. So if you were to bring yourself to Williams and say, I would love my name and face on the car, what can we work out? You are probably looking at somewhere $15 million a year and up. $15 million is probably a small little bit of, a little sticker. You're not going to be a title sponsor. You are not going to be a title partner. You're probably not even going to make your face on their overalls. But you're on the car in a little spot. Looks cool. If you are looking for like a Mercedes or something, those deals start getting into the hundreds of millions of dollars just because they are so high profile. They know that they're going to be out there competing at the front of the field. So you better be able to pay up for that.
So there's two things here. There's name title sponsors.
Right.
So it's in the name. So, for example, it's Aston Martin, Aramco, Cognizant, Formula One. That's a mouthful. That's the full length of their actual name. So as a title sponsor, they have Cognizant and Aramco.
That's why they're not winning. All those letters are weighing them down.
It's funny you bring that up because, and I'm just going to weave this in here. One of the tensions between the marketing team and the development team in a Formula One car is the marketing team has promised and sold all of this sponsorship, which we'll get back to in a second. And they now have to slap all of these logos on the car. And the mechanics are saying, whoa, hold a minute. Yeah. That's weighing us down. So can we scrap all of this paint off?
Yeah.
So again, it's another one of those.
You can't use a 14 font.
Just like,
we got to use a 6 font.
Every little ounce of paint matters.
Yeah.
So that's the first thing to know about title sponsors. So the title sponsors pay an absolute fortune. That's how the team, and you look at some teams, like there's a team like McLaren that I think have over 40 partners and sponsors.
Who is sponsoring? Who are these companies? Anybody?
More or less.
What about the bodega down there, which I do not recommend?
Okay. Good to know. Almost anyone can sponsor a Formula One team or a Formula One car.
Money.
That's the big thing.
Okay.
And we've had wild stories of quite literally Nigerian princes coming in and slapping their name on the... We've had... you heard the story of Rich Energy last year. We've had people with products that don't exist in the sport that have promised money. Whether the money's there or not, there is a whole thing. There's a couple, I think, of categories that are banned. Big Tobacco is one of them. So F1 was obviously highly, highly, highly sponsored by Big Tobacco back in the day. Then it went into alcohol. Then it went into big tech. And now it's gone into a little bit of crypto. I think last year, 9 out of 10 teams had a crypto sponsor. Have you ever heard, Michael, of the barcode livery saga?
No.
Tobacco advertising was banned in almost all sports from a European directive in 2006. Ferrari at the time, you remember the big Marlboro logo that they had on the side of their car? They thought it would be genius to redesign the livery with just basically like a barcode that looked on the side. But when that car is driving past you at high speed, you get the Marlboro chevron. And it's basically the Marlboro logo. Genius. That's, I will give credit where credit is due. And it's only when the promoters realized the car going by really fast that they were like, hold on a second. And they're not the only ones. But just to say, Big Tobacco is still in some way, shape or form involved in Formula One. I think obviously things like arms and weapons, like that's another bucket that they just wouldn't take. But other than that, I think the teams and the sport will take money from just about.
But it's
anyone.
Never it's never like super healthy stuff. You know, it's never like carrots. You know, it's always something nefarious. But I guess that says more about our culture and what we spend money on. Yep. I mean, wouldn't it be cool, though, if Alfa Romeo had like a bunch of carrots on the side?
So let's get started. For this absolutely delicious salad, you only
I wouldn't put it past them, you know.
Or Haas, we're missing a whole avocado thing.
Yep, the best two vegetables. Avocado and carrots.
Right? The Haas so avocado?
So what I'm hearing from you, Michael, is you just want a salad.
Now, I always recommend Haas avocados, but you can go ahead.
I'm thinking maybe my face, now that we're talking this out, chewing a carrot on an Alfa Romeo on the nose. That could be tricky because the carrot. But anyways, I'll check with my branding committee, my social media team, and we'll get back to you on that.
I like it.
Great. I'm fucking starving.
That was a lot.
There's a lot. There's a lot in this episode on how to make money.
Also worth saying that this was the tip of the iceberg.
Sure.
And there's probably a lot of things that we've missed, and there's probably a lot more detail that we can go into. But I'm curious, after listening to all of this and you know, getting hopefully most of your questions answered, do you think the business side of Formula One is exciting? Do you think you could get into it more?
Yeah, I do. I mean, what I love about the competitive arena is that people are driven to succeed and are creative, aggressive, persistent. And that definitely is being showcased here, from even just the way they manipulate the logo or change it because they need the money, to selling power units to competitors. That's fascinating to me. So they're willing to do whatever is needed to make money. And that definitely goes in line with my American capitalism upbringing. And it doesn't surprise me that this is how Formula One operates, because it just feels like such a competitive, high stakes arena where everything is on the table for potential profit. I find it interesting. Yes, I could potentially be a business fan of Formula One.
I like that.
This has been Choosing Sides, F1, a production of Sports Illustrated Studios, iHeart Podcast, and 101 Studio Podcasts. The show is hosted by Michael Costa and Tony Cowan-Brown. This episode was edited, scored, and sound designed by senior producer Yochai Meital. Scott Stone is the executive producer and head of audio, and Danielle Wexman is Director of Podcast Development and Production Manager at 101 Studios. At iHeart Podcast, Sean Titone is our Executive Producer. And a special thank you to Michelle Newman, David Glasser, and David Hutkin from 101 Studios. For more shows from iHeart Podcasts, go visit the iHeart Radio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. And whatever you do, don't forget to rate us and tell your friends. It really does mean a lot.
So you might think that Formula One is a race and it's all about the speed and the money. But the reality is Formula One is a lot like a game of chess. Mm. So next week, we're going in a completely different direction and we're going to talk all things game theory and strategy and explain why before the race, each team comes up with a plan A, B, C, D.
We are considering plan E for Eco.
In case you are wondering, Michael.
I was.
Plan E apparently stood for engine failure a few laps after the team radio. Carlos Sainz's engine burst into flame.
No. Yep.
So now we know what plan E stands for.
Yep.
Let's talk about what all the other plans mean for next week. Darling, we'll see each other soon.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
Right here, right now. Find your beautiful new floor at Right Rug Flooring. Choose from thousands of in-stock styles ready for next day installation and all backed by the right price guarantee. Visit rightrug.com. That's RITERUG.com today to schedule a free in-home estimate or to find a location near you. 24-month financing is available with approved credit. For 90 years, we've been right here, right now. Right Rug Flooring.
Whether you're a savvy spender maximizing your savings with cashback rewards, a thrifty rate watcher seeking the lowest interest, or a travel enthusiast looking for extraordinary perks, Kemba Financial Credit Union has a Visa to complement your lifestyle and unique needs. Apply today at Kemba.org to unlock a limited-time 2% cashback on purchases and pay 0% interest on balance transfers for an entire year with a new Visa from Kemba. You deserve a card that works for you. Restrictions apply. Offer ends June 30th, 2024.